Hey everyone, welcome to the Small Screen Couch Commentary Podcast, where we watch your favorite TV shows, give you our thoughts, and ask for yours. I'm Alex.
And I'm Billy. We're excited to watch and rewatch the best TV shows from start to finish and hope you're ready to take the ride along with us.
We'll talk about the best characters and their stories, reveal some hidden gems, and look for you to do the same.
From sci-fi to comedy, drama to anime, we've got it all covered. So grab your favorite snack and we'll see you on the couch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 4, Small Screen Couch Commentary, The Boys, season 2. I think season we forgot dose. To mention that
in
the last episode. We are officially at the halfway mark of season 2. And as I mentioned before, it is flying by.
It is.
I feel like this has gone by way quicker than season 1 did. And I'm not necessarily mad about that because we still have season 3 to get through.
Still have
more stuff there.
Generation. Was it Generation V?
Wow. Just Gen V.
Gen V.
Just Gen
V. Yeah, same thing, dude. Same thing.
Maybe. Well, we don't know. Maybe it's General.
Oh.
Maybe it's General V.
General V?
General V. That's a I Met Your Mother reference there, for those who don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. This episode, I won't say was a little lighter on the action. There was still some action.
But a wild ride indeed.
Oh, yes. Some ups and downs. But yeah, so as always, let's start off. Well, first off, I'm gonna go over the name of the episode because I think we missed that last episode as well. This one is called Nothing Like It in the World.
It's about me.
I you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
There's nothing like me in the world.
But as per usual, let's get crack-a-lackin' here. What were you snacking on?
I had some chips with some nacho cheese.
Okay, so tortilla chips then.
Tortilla chips, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever eaten like a salsa or a nacho cheese or something like that you would normally eat with tortillas?
But with another chip?
A different chip, yeah.
No.
Okay. Let me tell you. Let me put you on game, as the kids say. Next time you're gonna
so hip.
Next time you're gonna have like a. It works better with a cheese.
Okay.
Base sauce, but you could do it with sauce too. Instead of using tortilla chips, Doritos.
So cheese on cheese on cheese.
Yo, I am telling you. You think it might be too much? Nah.
What about Doritos Cool Ranch with that?
You know what? That would. I feel like. Doritos Cool Ranch would probably be better even with salsa than
aren't those
regular
technically
nacho
tortilla
cheese.
Chips though?
Oh, they definitely are.
Okay,
they're just coated. But I'm just saying, like a lot of people, I don't know that I've ran into anyone who has done that before, and I've done it plenty of times. I'm a big fatty, and I'm an unhealthy person, so
yeah.
Don't make a habit of it.
But it sounds delicious.
It is delicious.
Might clog the system up a little bit.
Might clog the system up a lot.
what were you snacking on, Big
me,
Dog?
I was snacking on some cereal. Some Apple Jacks, to be specific.
Sleeper.
Super sleeper.
Yeah.
Super sleeper. But a little upset because it was the last of my cereal. I have no cereal in the house. I wouldn't say we're like a mega cereal house. I eat it maybe, you know, a few times a month. So I don't really buy it a whole lot. But now I'm out and now I'm like, okay, well, I gotta get some more.
When I have cereal, I go through it pretty quick. But we don't have it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your favorite cereal out there? What's your favorite cereal? Number one. You had to go right now. Give me an answer.
Frosted Flakes, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
Basic bitch. Okay.
Whoa, chill the fuck out, dude.
Frosted Flakes? Is there not a more basic bitch answer than Frosted Flakes?
I didn't know Cheerios. Flakes. Just Corn Flakes. Yeah, there's a lot more basic bitch cereal.
Okay, I will give you Honey Nut Cheerios is probably more basic, but I don't know.
What's your favorite?
Oh, let me tell you.
Well, you know, Reese's Puffs are good, too.
Yeah, okay, but I wanted one answer. You gave it. It's too
right,
late.
Number two is Reese's. I
basic
guess.
Bitch Frosted Flakes.
Whatever. That's not basic. It's Frosted Flakes.
It's basic bitch. It's basic bitch.
Frosted Flakes. What's your favorite?
Okay, my favorite.
You
hands
get this
down,
if you hype this up
is,
and it's
is
fucking
an even
whack.
More basic bitch.
Okay, don't be talking shit.
It's Captain Crunch or Country Bears.
Oh my god, which is good. Don't get me wrong, but
also basic bitch.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying being a basic bitch is bad.
All right, so basic bitches on a small couch, right? Basic bitches commenting on a couch about a small screen.
Say that five times fast.
I'm done. Let's move on. Cutting that out in post.
No, we're leaving it.
We're too lazy. We don't cut it.
We're cutting that up, actually.
we're going to have to. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So what would you give the rating for this episode?
I really enjoyed this one, even though, like you said, it wasn't quite action-packed and craziness, but 8.5.
Okay. I was still in the 8s. I was slightly lower. I think last episode I gave it an 8.4. I gave this one an 8.2.
Okay.
Still a good episode. Lighter on the action, significantly lighter compared to last episode.
Yeah.
But
great character development.
Great character development, great plot development. A couple little nasty things.
And some sweet things.
And some sweet things, yeah.
Good amount of love making in this episode.
There was.
Yeah.
There was.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
And not so love making.
Very true. So the episode starts off, and it's interwoven throughout the episode. It starts off with a lady being interviewed, and you don't see who's interviewing her. It's kind of just a view of this person, and she's talking about communication in her relationship and why it's so important, and the fact that because there was lack of communication in her relationship, it ended and in not a great way.
Yeah.
But it's just a little odd because it's almost, you know, just weird because you don't see who's interviewing her, and it's almost like a confessional for a reality TV show.
Kind of got
that vibe from it initially.
And this happens throughout the episode, and you don't know what it's for.
Yeah, there's
for a
while. Different women throughout the episode where they randomly put in them being interviewed, and they're talking about either themselves and or their relationships, mostly their relationships. And you do eventually find out what it's for. And I want to get to that and do that whole spiel of that because I don't want to say that it's unimportant because it is important. And I have some theories about it. But I don't want to discuss that first.
Okay.
But that's how the episode starts, essentially. After that, we see we're back with the boys. Now, mind you, they are back, you know.
Rock bottom
again. They made some steps forward. They took a few steps back. And we open up here then with Frenchie, and he is like crushing up some pills, snorting it up, getting high.
Yeah.
Yeah. First off, don't ever do that again. Obviously, you probably heard that through the microphone, but wait until the clip of this comes out. Although it might not, because Billy's the video editor.
Yeah,
so he's
that makes me look stupid. I'm not clipping. Yeah, well, I clip everything that makes Alex look stupid.
It's fine.
Or you smart. Know you know, sometimes I make
maybe,
you look
maybe
smart.
Maybe I'll make a clip of my own.
Oh,
anywho.
Shit, I'm in trouble.
But yeah, Frenchie's getting high. And in his state of mind, he thinks, okay, well, now's probably a good time to go talk to Kimiko because Kimiko just watched her brother die viciously.
Yeah.
And essentially couldn't do anything about it. So she's not in a good place.
No.
Right now.
As a matter of fact, when you see her, she's back to her old cell. She's under a desk watching TV.
Right.
And she's watching the news about her brother, quote unquote, killing a bunch of people.
Right. Yeah. The whole situation from the last episode where her and her brother were running through this apartment building to get away from Stormfront. She's the one that's murdering everybody, but they pin it on her brother. I don't know that they actually mention Kimiko.
No.
In any of the blame. I wonder too, like, is there a reason that they left her out of,
right,
of things? Because technically she was also being propped up before the boys got to her as a super terrorist.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, is there, maybe I'm thinking too much into it, but they don't put any of the blame on her. Clearly, you know, any of the people who were at the scene saw two people that Stormfront was fighting. Because they do mention, I think, maybe in the clips here or maybe in the ending coverage from the last episode that, like, there were a bunch of people that were injured and then, like, 50-some people that were dead. So clearly the people that were injured, they had to have seen two people that Stormfront was chasing.
Maybe they got paid some money.
Oh,
yeah.
Could have been.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the blame is squarely on her brother. She's watching the news clips of it. Frenchie comes to try and comfort her and essentially telling her, like, hey, like, none of this was your fault. And trying to console her, but then just makes a boneheaded mistake.
I thought it was a great move.
Are you? I was just kidding.
I'm just kidding. He goes in for the kiss.
Yeah, he leans into her to try and kiss her. I think he actually does land his lips on her face.
Yeah,
doesn't quite connect with her lips, but she immediately pushes him away, and he's like, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry," because he thinks, "Okay, well, she could probably kill me right now."
Oh yeah.
So he's a little bit afraid, but
he leaves.
Yeah, he runs away. You know, tail between his legs. But stupid move from
Frenchie.
Come on, Frenchie.
Are you high or something?
I see what you did there.
I'm so good.
So, yeah, after this, we see that, you know, per the last episode, Homelander is not happy with how the events of the terrorist attack played out.
Right.
One, because he wanted to be the one to kill the terrorist or at least get the glory for capturing him. Yeah. I guess depending on Homelander probably would have played it differently depending on the situation. If he was in an area in a place where he could have killed him, no question, he would have done it, no doubt.
Right.
But if it was some other area, he might have turned him over. Who knows? But either way, he wanted to be the one to get the credit, and he did not. Stormfront got the credit.
She sure did.
So she's blowing up, you know, just in general. She's getting all this praise. He's thinking, well, that should have been me, and he's not happy about it. He's also kind of one for, I guess, for his efforts, has been making steps forward, but then getting knocked back too.
Yep.
So the boys, they take two steps forward, they get knocked back three steps. Same thing with Homelander. Homelander finds out he's got a son. He's happy. He's thinking, okay, well, I can be a dad now. I can do this and that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But now his son hates him.
Because Homelander's crazy.
Right. He thinks, okay, well, you know, I've finally gotten a win against Mr. Edgar because I've made him my bitch now and saying, like, you're in a situation where you need us, more specifically me, so I'm going to go and show you who's boss. But then Stormfront steals, you know, his spotlight.
Yep.
So he's not happy at all. And, you know, that's kind of created a bit of a fracture between Homelander and the public and Homelander and the Seven.
Yeah.
So that's just something I want to touch on. The next scene we kind of see there's a memorial that's on the streets where the victims of this terrorist attack, there's, you know, pictures and candles and this and that there. And we see, I think at first we see it's just Grace Mallory there, right?
Yeah.
So she's going and she's, you know, acting as if she's paying her respects to...
Well, she kind of is.
She is.
She is. She's not paying it like, oh, the super terrorist did this. She knows what happened.
Right.
She's not dumb.
Right. But essentially, she's there because she's meeting someone. And then out of the shadows comes our boy, Billy Butcher. And he's there. He's hooded up. And, you know, he's basically talking with her and essentially, at first anyway, admitting that, you know, what they were trying to do, they failed at. They couldn't get the super terrorist to her people to expose Vought yet again. And also just, you know, everything that he was trying to, the biggest reason that Grace Mallory was entrusting this mission to Billy was because she wanted to kind of bring justice for Susan Rayner.
Susan Rayner and a lot of people. So she,
right.
She talks about a dream she has, which
recurring dream.
Yeah. Which I really like this story she tells, right? She's doing a concert. I don't know what instrument she's playing. It doesn't really matter.
I don't think she says a concert specifically. She says she's on stage, but
okay, yeah.
I don't know that she mentioned
a concert. I picture a concert. I feel like she's playing an instrument.
Okay.
Violin is what I'm calling it. Now, she's playing the cello today.
Okay, all right.
She's on stage doing a show of some sort, and all the people in the crowd are all the people that superheroes have killed.
Right.
And it's because she knows that superheroes are bad, and she's pretty much saying like she wasn't able to stop. She wasn't able to save these people.
Right.
So it's really a recurring nightmare for her.
Yeah.
So pretty much she's like staring at this memorial thing, and these are more people that are going to be in that crowd down the road in her next dream.
Right. Right. And she
so
also,
she's down.
Yeah. She's not in a good place either. But she also mentions to Billy two very important things. One, and I don't remember which one comes first, but it's not
Liberty.
Super important.
Liberty does.
She gives him like an old magazine clipping, and he's like, well, what's this? And she essentially says it's a lead that you can chase down. There was a superhero back in the 70s named Liberty, and you know, she hasn't been around, no one's seen her in a while, but
Rayner was looking into it.
Right. Susan Rayner was looking into it, so maybe this is something you can find out, you know, why she was investigating it and figure something out.
There's an address on the back.
Right. And it's for somewhere...
somewhere down south.
North Carolina or something like that? I don't know. Sure. Somewhere in the south. Yeah. They do specify, but
who
cares? Somewhere down
you probably south. Care.
The other thing that she mentions that she has found Becca.
Mm-hmm.
She believes she's found her. She says, this is our best guess as to where she is. And she mentions it's a vault, like...
Compound,
like super secure.
Yeah.
Guards, cameras, the whole nine.
If she's anywhere, that's probably where she is.
Right. So she gives Billy that location, which is good because all Billy had was the scribblings with the crayon that he made when he woke up at that restaurant.
Yeah.
So now he has a more specific location as to where Becca could be.
And I like this because he's like, well, I didn't succeed to get this information. Why are you giving it to me? And she's like, just consider it a gift. I'm just giving it to you. Like, usually there's a trade-off between these two.
Right.
But then she says to him, I just don't want another person in that audience.
Right.
Which would be Becca.
Yeah, because essentially, prior to all these events, most people thought that she was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she had mentioned all the people in her dream are all the dead people that were, you know, from superheroes. So if she can manage to make sure that Becca gets out there, that's one less person that's a dead person from a superhero. So
yep.
Kind of trying to absolve her of the situation, because Grace Mallory is still kind of mysterious. We don't know a ton about her. Maybe we find out more later. But she's someone who, from what I'm getting, is a good person who maybe has, you know, a checkered past a little bit.
She's Billy Butcher, basically, in my eyes. Like, she's a good person, but she knows she has to be dirty to get stuff done against these superheroes.
Right. So we move on from there, and we get to a very weird scene where Homelander, if we recall, he's upset with everything going on. And he needs some comfort.
Comfort, yeah. He needs somebody.
He is flying. He does like a superhero landing, and we see him in front of a cabin.
Cabin in the woods.
Secluded cabin. You know, nobody else around. And he walks in and sees a familiar face. Someone who has offered him comfort in the past, and it is none other.
Beautiful lady.
Than Madeline Stilwell.
So, question to you. What was your thoughts right at this moment?
I thought he was hallucinating. Or
okay.
Dreaming, maybe.
Okay.
I'm thinking, okay, either A, this is just something he's making up in his head to comfort himself because he's kind of down in the dumps about everything, about his son, about not being in the spotlight anymore. This is just a construct in his mind to help him cope with the situation.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
Either that or that he was having a dream.
When I first watched it, I was like, is she not dead?
So that was my third thought then was, okay, if this isn't a dream, if this isn't something that he's made up in his head, did he not really kill her? I mean, we saw him laser the shit out of her, yeah. And then Billy blew her up. So that was my third thought then is, okay, maybe she's not dead?
Yeah.
You know.
It definitely was
but
a
how
weird
that could
situation.
Have been?
How? Yeah.
I don't know.
But in this world, superheroes, all that, the nine, you know. But.
That's strange in and of itself that she shows
here,
back up.
But she's in some lingerie.
Yeah.
Some lingerie.
Some lingerie.
She has some.
You know, looking very nice.
A cup of milk.
Yeah. And the whole thing with Homelander and the milk, it's weird and it keeps getting weirder.
Told ya.
So. She has a cup of milk. She walks up to him all seductive and she's like, are you thirsty? And here's one thing. I don't know if this is regular milk, if this is breast milk. I guess to Homelander, it doesn't really matter. He had that weird situation at Becca's house with the milk, too.
Yeah. He just loves milk, dude.
Yeah, but she then, rather than just like giving him the cup or even like holding it up to him so he could drink it, she sticks her fingers in the milk. And then puts it on his lips and then shoves it in her fingers in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he is loving it.
So was Alex. Alex was loving this.
No.
Oh.
No. I'm not a huge milk person. But aside from that, this whole situation is just weird.
Yeah. I grew up drinking milk for dinner a lot.
No.
Then that changed.
Not in my household.
We grew up in a time when it was like, you need milk for strong bones. Granted,
right.
Milks do give you strong bones. But either way, just a little backstory on Billy for you.
Yeah, but it's just disgusting.
This stuff is gross. Like this, It's weird how much he loves it. And why does he love milk? We first see the breastfeeding thing. It's like, okay, maybe because he never had a mommy.
Right.
But now it's just like, it's just
weird.
Well,
it's also weird because it's not just a mommy insecurity type thing. It's a sexual thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, whenever he smells milk, he goes, oh.
Yeah, he gets aroused. But yeah, so they just
have to float your boat, Homelander.
Look, I'm not trying to yuck anyone's yum. I'm not trying to say, hey, if you like this, you're a weirdo. It's just,
do you yum anyone's yuck?
No?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how that, what. Anyway, moving right along. Just I'll just say a unique situation.
Yeah, we're getting off topic. So Stillwell is baby feeding Homelander here the milk a little bit and having conversations, pretty much hyping him up, being like, you are the best, you're the greatest, and all this. And
yeah,
he needs this because he's in a spot where he's down. So this is why this is happening, right?
Right, right.
So they go to the point where they're sitting on the couch and doing the old school thing where he's laying on her lap.
Yeah, he has his head in her lap, and she's just kind of, you know, stroking his hair and this and that, whatever, continuing to praise him. But then out of nowhere, she kind of starts to moan and groan a little bit.
In pain, yeah.
Yeah, she's in pain, and Homelander kind of sits up, and all of a sudden we see it's not actually Madeline.
Well, I love it because you don't see it yet. You see Homelander, and it's hidden behind his face, and he's like, turn back now! Turn back now!
Yeah, we find out it's Doppelganger, who has already impersonated Madeline before.
Yeah.
And he basically says, like, oh, I'm sorry. I can only hold a form so long before it starts to hurt. And he's like, change fucking back now. Because he doesn't want to see Doppelganger. When he sits up, he's facing the other direction. Doppelganger's behind him.
Yeah.
And so finally then, Doppelganger changes back. He lays his head back down. And he's like, okay, I'm good now. I can be comforted again.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what's weirder. The fact that, you know, he has this whole weird mommy son romantic sexual relationship with Madeline and is still, you know, holding on to that and the whole milk thing too, or if it's weirder that he's now trying to still have this after having killed her.
Yeah.
And he knows it's not the real thing. He knows it's Doppelganger.
Do you think he has sex with Doppelganger? As Madeline Stillwell?
I don't know, because so when Doppelganger was impersonating the hooker that was seducing the senator dude, you know, they have sex, obviously, but the senator dude mentions that it feels different.
Different, yeah.
So I don't know if Doppelganger is able to change everything or if Doppelganger still has, you know, his male parts when he's other people. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if I want to explore that topic any more than we just did.
Let's dive deeper. No, okay. Anyway.
No thanks.
So yeah, they go back to being weird and being comforted. Yeah.
Yeah. So we come back and I want to then go and kind of explore the boys and their situation, because this has two prongs that pretty much take up the most of the episode.
I would say so, yeah. So Billy comes back with the information. He's like, hey, she knows Rebecca is. I'm going.
Yeah, and MM's kind of like saying, like, hey, like, we kind of need you. Huey's in a bad place. I don't know what's going on. Like, and I think he's also worried because when Billy wasn't in the picture in the first episode, they were kind of just floundering.
Yeah.
You know, and then they got their leader back, and now he's essentially abandoning them again.
Yeah, but he does say to MM, like, hey, you're in charge now.
Right.
Follow this lead of the Liberty thing. You know, I have to go see Becca. If there's any chance this is Becca, I got to go.
Right. And I think MM understands.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll say this, and it's not explicitly said. It's not even subtly said or anything like that. I kind of have to believe that there's a little bit of good in Billy, and that if the roles were reversed, I think he would also see MM and be like, okay, yeah, you go find your wife.
I think so.
I have to.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's tough to tell with Billy. He's a hard man to read.
It is. It is tough to tell. And who knows what he's. I think there's more often than not, you can see pretty clearly when he's doing something for himself. But Every now and then he has glimpses
of
goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of light in that boy. Which road do you want to go down here first? Billy or MM?
So I want to go down Billy's road here.
I like it.
Because I feel like it's a little more impactful overall for his situation. And the other one is more impactful in a broader sense. So I want to go this because it's a little more specific.
Okay.
But before we go down that road, so we've got Billy. He's on a mission to go see Becca. He's assigned MM to go on a mission to follow this lead with Liberty.
With Huey.
South, wherever it is.
Do you want to follow? Are we going down Frenchie's road? A little short road with Frenchie. Can I hit that road real quick?
Hit it real quick.
All right. Frenchie is drunk. And he knocks on.
Drunk and high.
Drunk and high. And smells like dog piss, apparently. Knocks on none other than Cherie's door, which I love Cherie. I miss her.
Yeah,
you know?
I do wish we got more of her. We only got like a bit of her in season one when she first was introduced. There's another like small glimpse of her in the middle.
Yeah.
And then like I think we got like another like 2 seconds of her at the end.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was even the beginning of
this season we see her for a little bit. But he knocks on her door, opens the door. She's like, you smell like piss or something like that. And he's out of it and pretty much explaining like something's going on. And she's like, okay, what's wrong? Oh, no. First, I forget what goes on. But he starts to come in with her. And she's like, what makes you think somebody's not here? And he gets pissed and like pushes in. And that kind of turns her on a little bit. So they start making out. They obviously get down and dirty.
Yeah.
But then they're having the pillow talk. And she's like, really, what's going on here? And he says, I tried to kiss her. And she goes, Kemiko. And he's like, what makes you think that was? And he's like, yeah, her brother died, tried to kiss her. It's like, what makes you think that was a good idea?
Yeah, she basically says, like, you thought kissing her was going to be the thing that comforts her in a situation where she just watched her brother die?
Yeah, like, you ain't got that kind of power.
Well, and this is interesting, too, because prior to this, there was one part in season one, where she was giving him the gas to knock out Kimiko, where she basically was like, yo, this is mine, and like was grabbing his junk.
Yeah.
And so I kind of thought when this happened and he admitted that to her that she was going to be upset, and she was not really.
No, they have a pretty open relationship, but his junk is still hers, you know?
True.
You know?
True.
But yeah, they have that conversation. They bring up Lamplighter again, and he gets a little defensive. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And she's like, look, I'm just trying to give you advice. That's part of it, right? So quick scene and everything, but you still see this Frenchie's trying to figure out what he needs to do. He also says, like, she's like, leave her alone. And he's like, but what is mourning alone? Like, there's nothing good about mourning something alone.
Yeah.
So it's a nice scene. You see, understand Cherie and Frenchie's relationship a little bit better because of this. Like, they still get down and dirty, but they don't care if they're with other people. Well, she doesn't care if he's with other people.
True.
Yeah.
True. So we covered that. Before each other team, you know, member of the boys goes on their little adventure. Huey, at one point, he's trying to meet back up with Starlight.
Yeah.
And,
well, she wants to meet up with him because.
Right.
We probably should go to the scene on why.
Sure, we can.
She's in the elevator.
Yes.
She's in the elevator, and a Homelander comes in, and she's like, hey, Homelander. Elevator shuts. He has the emergency stop button. And he's like, you didn't kill Huey when I fucking told you to.
Right. You hesitated.
Yeah. You're not on my side. Da, 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 da. And he grips her up,
he starts to choke her against the wall.
And then takes his hand and puts it on her side. You can tell he's digging into her. Like, he's going to just rip through her body and kill her. And saying all this stuff. And she's like, Huey broke my heart. And I want to kill him. I just said that we should take him to the police, blah, blah, blah. And she's like defending herself, but getting real.
Right.
Strong. She's being strong against Homelander.
Well, because he accuses her of
lying.
Being with him still.
Yeah. And
or again.
Yeah, and lying.
Like,
to
I'm
him.
Not with him.
And I want to kill him, but we had to do that. So if you want to kill me for doing the right thing and taking him to the police, then do it. And then she looks at him and is like, am I lying?
Right.
And he gets mad because he puts her back down and goes, you're not lying, and walks out.
Yeah.
But she almost died.
Pretty much.
She's in a tough spot. So she wants to be with Huey, and she's like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. She's basically saying, like, you know, she is afraid that every time she's in the tower, she is
her life
thinking that she's going to turn the corner and Homelander is going to be there to kill her.
Yeah.
and Huey also, he kind of plays off the fact that the last voicemail he left her, he was in so many words saying that he was going to end things for himself.
Yeah.
And he's just like, let's just not focus on that. You know, forget that voicemail. But yeah, that's when they're kind of having a conversation, and they're trying to be incognito because Annie is tracked by Vought, and she's known to some people that she's Starlight, but not everybody. It's weird how, like, it's not like a Clark Kent situation where it's like, oh, I've got like glasses and whatever. Like, she's just not in her costume,
and she also doesn't have the wig.
Yeah,
but she still looks like Starlight.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and the whole thing with Clark Kent and Superman, that was always weird to me, too. It's like, oh, he puts on glasses, and now nobody doesn't know who he is. Yeah. Anywho, but, yeah, so they're meeting in the park, which is, like, their usual meeting place. They get under a bridge, and Huey gets a phone call from MM and is like, yo, we got to chase this lead down. We got to peace out.
Yeah.
And so
Huey's half about to leave.
Yeah. He turns around. He's like, are you okay?
Are you going to stay here for a while?
Yeah.
And she's like,
I can't go back to the tower.
Yeah, she's like, I am going to stay here.
Yeah. So essentially then Huey tries to tell them, like, yo, we got to bring her with us. Like,
she needs this.
Yeah. She needs to get away from stuff for a little bit and whatever.
Yeah.
So that sets up their arc. And then we have Billy's arc. Let's get into Billy first. He knows or thinks he knows where Becca is. And we see this part was kind of, I was a little kind of just like, really? I couldn't momentarily suspend belief here. He goes to this secure compound.
Highly secure compound.
Yeah. And all it is just a big wall. And he just throws a rope over it.
And climbs over.
Climbs right in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if it was that easy, like, anybody could get in there.
Yeah. It's so weird.
That was just kind of one of the things I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But eventually he makes his way to Becca's house. She notices that, like, her car door is ajar. And she's like, let me go check it out. And she goes in to, like, kind of inspect the car, and he's in the back seat, kind of hunched down, and he's like, yo, is there any place around here without cameras? She realizes him, and she kind of plays it off. She grabs, like, a pack of cigarettes and a lighter, and she goes, there's, like, a camera at her house, and she, like, shows the camera, like, hey, I'm gonna go take a smoke.
Yeah.
So she gets in the car. They drive off to an area that she believes doesn't have any cameras, and, you know, they're there, and she basically is like, oh, my gosh, I don't know how you got back to me, but thankfully you're here.
I'm so sorry for all the things you've gone through. Blah,
right.
Blah.
Right. And Billy's kind of, you know,
sweet at this moment.
Yeah, it is very nice because we see a softer side of Billy, and he's just there to try and comfort her. And they're both kind of empathizing with each other's situations. You know, he's basically like, you know, saying like, oh, my gosh, like, you're so strong for having been here. You've been captured and basically held hostage for all these years. She's basically like, okay, yeah, you've been on the run. Like, this is, you know, crazy, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I wonder, too, does she get, like, news and stuff from the outside world while she's in there? I don't know if they ever mention.
I don't think so, because later on they mention, like, he tries to say he does some kind of job, and she's like, bullshit.
Right.
I've heard, I think from Homelander, like, right, you've been on a war path. So, no, I don't think she gets the outside world news.
Well, so
other than what Vault probably wants Ryan to see.
He basically mentions to her, like, he got in here and he's there to try and get her out, to rescue her. And she's like, I don't know how, you know, we can. And he's like, well, I got in here and I got out of here once before. And she mentions to him, like, hey, that was a one-time deal. And she pretty much spells it. I think she had mentioned that before. But she spells out to him here, like, the only reason Homelander spared your life is because I told him that if he hurt you in any way, that I would kill myself in front of Ryan, and my last words would be like, you know, it's your fault.
It's Homelander's fault.
It's Homelander's fault.
Yeah. And so that worked out one time.
Yeah. But she's like, that's it. You know, that was your golden get out of jail free ticket.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen again.
But he doesn't care. He loves her. He's like, well, we're going to get out of here together, me and you.
Yeah. Oddly enough, they concoct a plan for him to get out through a garbage truck.
Yeah.
Which is the most, like, I don't know, kind of just cheesy action movie way to get out of a situation.
It's also funny because she's like, it comes every morning at 11. It's like, they come once a week.
Yeah. Garbage trucks is one. Yeah. And depending on where you live, sometimes not even that often.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, oh, and he even says, like, are you sure it's not a compactor? She's like, no, it's just a, you know, just a storage area in the garbage truck.
Little truck. Yeah.
So that was just another point where I was kind of just like, okay, I'm going to let it go for now.
Yeah.
But just a little nitpicky, you know, situation there.
Yeah. So she does leave and come back, get some blankets. They make sweet, sweet love.
Yeah.
Smoke a cigarette, talk about the plan. And bring up, like, well, Ryan has to come, too. And he's like, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. You know, we'll bring this kid who isn't mine along for the ride here. But, yeah, they do that. They basically say, okay, well, this is how we're going to get out. And then we'll just kind of be on the run together. And she says, okay, well, I've got to get back. But I'm going to come back in the morning with Ryan. And we'll execute the plan. And we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
So Billy, I guess, presumably just sleeps in the woods or whatever, underneath this bridge, or I don't know.
A little troll under the bridge.
But they cut then to, well, I should say, for our purposes, we're cutting to the next morning where Becca comes back and Billy's worried. He's got this worried look on his face.
Like, where's the kid?
Well, at first he says, whoa, like, you're late. You know, what's going on? He's worried because he's thinking if she's late, well, something must have happened to her. So she finally screws up. He's like, you're late. And he notices she's by herself. He's like, where's the kid? And she basically says to him, like, I didn't bring him because I knew that this wasn't going to work out.
You wouldn't
accept him. You would have found a way to get rid of him. It might not have been at first, or it might not have been for a while, but you would have found a way to, like, leave him behind or cut him out of my life. And he's like, no, you know.
I told you, bring the kid.
Yeah, and she's like, no.
I saw it in your face.
Yeah, I could tell immediately that you didn't want to accept him. And he's still trying to, like, play it off, like, no, it's okay. Like, I would have made this work.
But it turns into, like, a small argument. Like, nothing crazy.
Yeah.
But she mentions something, and then he just says, but he's a superhero freak.
Right.
And that's what clicks, like, yeah, see, I told you.
Yeah. I mean, she basically, in so many words, says, like, you've harbored this hate for Supes and whatever for however long. And it kind of, she also kind of alludes, and I don't know how you felt about it, she alludes to the fact that this has been something since before her that he hasn't liked Supes.
Hasn't been a big fan of Supes. Yeah, I would believe so.
Yeah.
It's just made it even worse, obviously.
Right. All the events that happened between her and Homelander and over the last 8 years have fueled the fire, but it seems like Billy is always not liked Supes.
Yeah. Well, and he also mentions, like, I forgot to say this, that Bald's going to find the kid's important to Bald, Becca.
He says Ryan is a multi-billion dollar asset to them. They're never going to stop looking for him.
But Becca, they don't care about.
They don't care, so they could escape. Yeah. They could get away.
They could go to the Bahamas, you know?
Right. They'll be on the run, but at least they won't be, you know, as in danger as if they had Ryan with him.
But she makes a great point. She's like, so then he gets raised by Vault again, and we just get another Homelander.
Right, right. He's already grown up without a father,
right,
for the most part. If he grows up without a mother, it's just Homelander Jr., mm-hmm. Homelander number two.
Yeah.
And they don't need two Homelanders running around.
No.
Which is funny because I had mentioned before that my theory is that that's what Homelander wants. He wants another mini-me. He wants another one of him. So that way, either A, they can be all powerful together, or B, if something happens to him, he can kind of carry on his legacy.
Yeah. And also, that's numbers. He's a dad and all that stuff.
I don't know that Homelander cares that much about being a dad. I think he
does. No. Numbers for, like, points. Yeah.
And money. With the public.
Yeah. Oh, he's a dad, and it's the same. You know, he has a son. Plus, he'd be pretty popular for being the first kid born a superhero.
Right.
And that'd be Homelander's kid. Yeah. Anywho. But, yeah, so it turns out she says, I hit this button, people are going to be here in 1 minute.
All the security is going to be here in 60 seconds. You've got to go.
Yeah.
You know, I think
and it breaks her heart to do this. You can tell.
Right, but. Right. He says he loves her. She says, I love you back. But she did this because, one, she knew that if she didn't, he would have either forcibly made her leave, or even if she could convince him to leave with Ryan, it wouldn't have worked out in the end. So
no. She
forces his hand and says, look, I'm making this happen so that you can go and you leave without me.
Yeah.
You know, and she drives off. He gets out of there, and, you know, that's kind of the end of their arc of this episode. But I'm not going to lie, kind of felt bad for Billy.
Oh, me too. He finally got to Becca, and then he can't keep stay with her. And right. she's the one that pushes him away, which obviously probably hurts. I also thought, like, dude, can you just convince Vault to have you live with her?
I don't know that he can.
Yeah.
Because, one, Vought has twisted the tables and made them the outlaws, right? And I have a feeling eventually they're going to obviously connect them with the super terrorists and all that and further discredit their image. And even if they let Billy live with her and, like, he never is seen in public again, they I don't think they want any sort of loose ends
yeah.
now that he's out there and he's wanted. Plus, they won't let Vault won't let him live there because it's going to be an issue for Homelander.
True.
So
yeah, good point.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad for him because it's like he did all this work over the last 8 years.
I mean, that's been his only thing.
He thinks his wife is dead. Then he finds out she's alive. Then he's torn away from her again. Then he gets back to her. He's like, okay, we've got a plan. And then it blows up.
Yeah.
It goes to shit.
That's the only thing he's been working towards, you know? So it's like, what's his life mission now?
Right. So we don't really see anything else with Becca or Billy for the rest of this episode. I'm interested to see where it goes because you're right. Now he has no purpose. So, you know, when and if he links back up with the boys, what's that going to be like? He's been their leader because he's always had an end goal. And now that he's gotten to that goal and it's not worked out the way he wants it to, I think he's going to be a broken man and he's not going to be the same Billy. It's going to go one of two ways. Either he's going to go really far off the deep end.
Yeah, on a rampage.
Or he's going to be a little bitch. And I have a feeling he's going to be way off the deep end. Just from everything else we've seen, I don't see him like turning into a little bitch and being like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, sit in the back seat here and you guys do stuff and I'm along for the ride. Like, that's not going to happen. I don't think
that was a great Billy Butcher impression.
It was terrible. It was terrible. But either way.
Absolutely terrible.
So we finished that. Let's go then with Huey, MM, and Starlight.
Yeah.
Huey convinces MM to bring Starlight along for their trip. She makes up a thing where it's like, okay, well,
I have a cousin
down there. I'll act like I'm visiting her. So they're on their way down to wherever it is in the South, and they're on a road trip. They have Billy's car, which, by the way, how that's survived all this time.
I don't know.
This old-ass car from, like, the 80s or 70s, having run through a building and all the chases and everything else they've had, it's still in pristine condition.
It's doing great.
Shitty, but pristine
condition. It's running just fine, baby.
You know, yeah.
It don't make them like they used to, you know?
I guess not. But it's funny, as they're road tripping down, it's kind of just silence in the car, and Starlight's like, oh, can I put on some music? And so he turns on the radio, and every station is her song from
Translucent's funeral.
Yeah, from his funeral. It's like on three or four different stations.
Freaking Huey's just sucking up. You got a great voice. You do that little like thing.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. And MM knows the correct, like, term. It's the vibrato.
Yeah, and MM's he's already annoyed. He's like, it's vibrato.
Yeah, yeah. But then they, I don't, is it that they put on a tape or
no?
Something?
It just switches the channel, and finally they get
a Billy Joel song.
We didn't start the fire.
Right.
I love that song.
Great song. Huey and Starlight start singing along to it. They know all the words, word for word. And it's almost like MM's like the annoyed parent in the front seat, and they're the two kids.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Huey's singing it, and then she starts to sing it, and he gets all happy like, oh, she knows the song too?
Right.
And then they start singing together. And then finally, MM just freaking loses it.
He cuts it off and is like, nope. We're done with that.
This is not some Vegas vacation road trip.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not your chaperone.
Right. Right. But it's funny too, along the way as they're driving, there's one part in particular where
Homelander's cape?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's like a big barn and there's a painting of Homelander. And Homelander's cape is the American flag, right?
Not on this
one. Or some version of the American flag. But on this one, his cape is the Confederate flag.
Did you see some of the weird signs throughout the show?
No.
One sign shows a baby with the blue eyes, like the laser beam eyes, and it's like, your aborted child could be a superhero.
Oh, yes. That was on a billboard.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird billboards and a lot of like Southern
right-wing conservative views and messaging.
But mixed in with the superhero stuff. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Because even they're in a restaurant eating, and even the placemats are Confederate flags.
I don't think I noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the whole time I'm watching this, I forget, and I'm like, does MM get, like, somebody start something?
Yeah.
Does somebody start something with him?
I kind of thought that, too. It's like, okay, you've got an African-American dude in the South where...
At least in these areas that they're visiting aren't very friendly to African-American dudes.
Not at all.
But that doesn't happen. But they have a nice Starlight and him have a nice conversation.
Yeah, they kind of reminisce about their dads and the good times that they had with them. And they, you know, essentially talk about how their dads used to get them sweets and whatever, or memories that they had surrounding their fathers and sweets. And they have a little cheers and like to fathers and sugar.
Yeah, which is pretty sweet. And it's kind of nice because you don't hear much about Starlight's dad, right?
Right. And aside from the fact that her mom said that he left because of like their financial situation.
Which was a lie.
Which was, yeah, untrue.
But he has food with her and asks her how her day was and actually listens and like. Felt like her mom didn't do that. Her mom just wanted to get her through the pageants and stuff. And Mem talks about just being with his dad and how he wishes... He was embarrassed about the situation he was in with his dad as a kid, but now he's like, I shave a year off my life to spend more time, to have that time again.
Yeah, he'd be willing to take a year off his life to have that embarrassing moment one last time.
Heck yeah. So it touches the heart a little bit. Yeah,
definitely. And I know from the beginning you had mentioned that of the boys, you know, one of your favorite people is Frenchie. I kind of like MM more than Frenchie.
Becomes like,
I'm not saying Frenchie's bad, but he's grown on me more than Frenchie has.
And like I said from the beginning, MM always grows on you more and more throughout the whole show.
Yeah.
He and just the stuff he says, I forget what the hell he says. I think it's in later episodes, so I'll wait. I'll be able to watch it again. But he has some funny lines. And he always calls like people motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he does.
I love it.
Well, and the thing is,
and he's got a dope ass chain.
For me personally, I can relate more to MM than any of the other ones. And I also feel like they're all, you know, this is all just make believe in a big production in a movie, you know, or not a movie, a big show, whatever. But he's the one that I feel is the most grounded in reality.
Yes, he 100% of all of them.
Except for maybe Huey, but even Huey, I kind of like separating him a bit. Like,
yeah, I'm more like Frenchie. I do a lot of drugs and deal drugs and guns.
I don't know that that's true.
I don't do anything.
But yeah, like MM, he's a father, so I can relate to that.
Yeah.
He's, you know, missing his family. I can relate to that. He's doing what he's doing just to get back to his family. That is a little bit more relatable, a little more grounded in reality for me than some of the other characters.
Yeah. No, I understand that. And MM's a great character. He's definitely top tier.
Yeah.
But as they're leaving the restaurant, you have to notice, like, Starlight's starting to notice all these OCD things about MM.
Yes. She says to Huey, like, he stirs his coffee three times. He taps on the steering wheel three times when he's changing lanes.
Yeah.
Like, what's up with that? And
Huey's like, oh my gosh, you're right. I didn't really notice this.
Yeah. That part actually doesn't happen until a little bit later.
No,
but she notices.
He brings out wet wipes because. He's like, you dry wipe? He's like, what?
Yeah, she's trying to just like wipe her hands off from the. They were eating donuts.
Yeah.
So her hands are probably a little sticky or whatever.
And he's like,
you're just smearing shit around with that.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But then as this conversation is happening, a truck just decks a car backing out of the parking lot.
Right.
So right away, Annie wants to go help out and they pull her back. Like, hey, you can't. Like, you can't.
You got
to
be low key here. Like, if you go and save these people, now all of a sudden, people see Starlight. Or they see somebody saving these people. They're going to question what's going on that. Or they're going to recognize you as Starlight.
And we're with you.
Right. So we're screwed here. So they convince her not to save these people. You know, they say, hey, that person's already calling 911.
Let's get out of here.
We're good. We got
to
go.
They get to a motel. Huey's like, there's two rooms. So obviously, and he looks over at Starlight. I'll be sleeping with MM.
Yeah,
and
he's like, good choice.
Yeah, MM cracks me up. Good choice. But... He does sleep in MM's room, but MM is a snoring bull.
Yet another way I can relate to MM.
Yeah, right?
Because exactly. I snore like crazy.
I have come to the age where I wake myself up from my snores as I'm falling asleep.
Oh, no. I'm not that bad.
Oh.
I shouldn't say I'm not that bad. I snore pretty badly, but I'm also a very deep sleeper. So it's like, I literally have slept through an earthquake.
I'm dozing off and I start snoring and that gets me back up. Like, I'm like, oh snap. He gets a text message from Starlight and she's like, candy machine problem. I need some advice. So they meet up at the candy machine. She eats some Almond Joy, which Huey gives her crap for.
Right. Which I would have too. Nobody likes Almond Joys or Mounds. Like,
Yeah.
I think when you talk to a lot of people about, you know, the worst candy bars or like the ones at Halloween or Easter or whatever that like you don't want to get, Almond Joy and Mound are very often
and,
in the top
and Bits O' Honey,
five,
which she brings up
in the worst candies that they could get.
What Chewy says to her. I think he even says like he brings up serial killers are the only people that like
Almond
Joy.
Yeah, he says Jeffrey Dahmer's the only one that would like
Almond Joy. Yeah, which is funny.
There's another connection to Almond Joy in this episode. A very, very small thing, and you don't see any sort of resolution to this plot line, and it is one that I want to mention before we get too much further here. So the Almond Joy, right? She's eating that. There's another person in this episode that's also eating an Almond Joy. Did you catch on that?
No.
So super quick, another person we don't really get a whole lot of, which I was hoping we'd get more of, and maybe we are after this, I don't know. Black Noir at one point has a small scene throughout the, or not throughout. They go back and forth. He has a small scene with one of the security analysts. And I think this chick was in the first season too.
Yeah, she's the one that they kept going to find people. That's right. She was eating an Almond Joy.
Yeah, she was eating an Almond Joy. Black Noir goes to her and he doesn't say anything. He just has like a big construction paper sign and just says Butcher on it. And she pretty much says like, okay, like you're wanting to find Billy Butcher. Don't you worry about it. Like we're working on it. As soon as we get an alert or whatever, I'll let you know. And Black Noir is just like, nah. And he sits down. He's like, you know, kind of intimidating her a little bit.
She's like, or you can just sit here.
Yeah, you could sit here and I guess I'll search for him now.
Yeah. Also, can we rewind too? I forgot to mention this in the last episode when they find out Compound V was made. They show Black Noir crying in the hallway, sitting down.
I forgot about
that.
So
you get Black Noir again. Just keep paying attention.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I forgot about that.
So they are, you know, she's scrubbing through a bunch of cameras and footage and whatever. She's trying to run facial recognition. And eventually she does see that Billy Butcher is at the big
compound
where Becca's being held.
Giving the finger.
And as soon as he scales the wall with this rope, there's a camera there which sees him doing it. And he looks right at the camera and just gives them the finger. Which then Black Noir sees that and they cut away. And that's all you get of Black Noir. But I just wanted to make that connection with the Almond Joy because now there's two people who eat one of the worst candy bars ever. Anyway.
The only two people.
Back
anyway,
to Huey and Starlight.
Huey and Starlight, they get a little flirty and they end up...
They hook up.
They make sweet love in a motel room.
Yeah.
It's weird because she turns the light off with her mind and then like, I still want to see you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay.
It was a little strange, but you know, that's their... You know, their situation. But yeah, so the next day, they're back on the road. They get to this address from the clipping that Grace Mallory had given to Billy Butcher. They knock on the door. Huey knocks on the door, actually. And this lady comes to the door. She's a little bit older, probably in her 50s, maybe. And he asks, he just, hey, ma'am, we're looking for someone, an old superhero by the name of Liberty. Are they here? And the lady's like,
no.
I don't know what you're talking about. No.
Closes the door. It's also important to note, just for the storyline, this is an African-American lady.
Right.
So MM knocks on the door, and she's still like, no, I'm not talking to this. She's like, well, just hear me out. Like, I'm not with Vaught, all this stuff. He tells a nice little story about his dad. Dad was a lawyer. Vaught did something bad. He kept trying. Every night would be up on that typewriter trying to write up stuff to fight all the lawyers and everybody at Vaught for what they did. But then until one morning he woke up and the typewriting wasn't done anymore and he died at 55.
Yeah.
He just goes, I want to continue that fight.
Yeah. He says he passed along his fight on to me and I want to finish this and, you know, get some justice for what happened.
Yeah. I think he mentions not dying so I can spend time with my family or something like that.
So
she lets him in and she's kind of like, you guys are crazy. But whatever, I guess I'll tell you the story.
Yeah, she essentially says, like, I don't know why you're dredging up these old memories in this past, but if you really want to know, I'll lay it on you.
So she gives you a flashback. She's driving home with her brother way back in the day.
Yeah, it's in the 70s, presumably.
Yeah. If not earlier.
And she's in the back seat.
Laying down sleeping.
Right. All of a sudden, the car stops. There's some commotion.
There's a lady standing in front of the car.
Right. And it's a soup. And this is Liberty.
Yeah.
And her brother gets out of the car. And I think she says something along the lines of, like, this car was reported coming from a crime scene. And he's like, no, this is my car. I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, no, you're part of this and whatever. And she like grips him up, I think. And he gets scared.
He's like, why are you doing this? I'm just trying to get home.
Meanwhile, this lady who's having this flashback, she's up. She's seeing through the car window her brother arguing with Liberty. And, you know, they have a little bit more of an argument. But then literally Liberty punches him in the face. But not just punches him in the face. Punches him so hard that he dies.
He's not dead yet.
He's not?
No. So anyway, she does punch him really hard, and like it crushes his face.
Yes.
Right? She, and she calls, she's racist about it. She says stopping a black person is doing the right thing because I'm stopping.
Forgot about that. Yeah. Yes.
So she makes
not to mention that because that's a very important part.
Yeah, makes a very important thing to her that she's doing this because he's black.
Right.
And so the
Liberty goes away.
She goes away, and
the girl comes out.
And she's like, I watched my brother die. You can hear him breathing hood in the rain, and I mean his face is,
they show it, I mean his jaw is just completely mangled,
yeah,
half of his face is hanging off of his skull,
yeah, and basically she saw her brother die. It was that time in the country, in the South, like they're not going to listen to a black family going against Vaught, and Vaught offered $2,000 to keep their mouth shut. And the parents are like, there's nothing we can do. So, yeah, we'll just take the money.
Right.
So it really hurts her. She's like, $2,000. That's what my brother's life was worth.
Yeah.
And this is like, this is sad. Like, this whole moment kind of like, the show takes a turn here, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, it does take a turn down this road of like, okay, now we're fighting against something a little different in this show. So, yeah, it turns out we find a little bit more about Liberty. Like, well, don't.
Right.
Because the lady says, don't tell anybody I told you this. I don't need her coming back to me. And Huey's like,
this lady hasn't been seen since the 70s.
Yeah, she's probably super old, blah, blah.
And she's like, no, she's all over the place now.
Yeah, let me show you here.
And she brings out, like, I think it's
a newspaper. And it has Stormfront on it.
That's her right there. And she says, points at a picture. And it's Stormfront, yeah.
Yeah, so Stormfront somehow is fighting against, is de-aging or whatever, and becoming a different superhero.
Yeah, I don't, I have a couple theories here. So
I don't know what's happening,
but you do. So we find out then, obviously, from this lady that Stormfront is Liberty and that she's obviously been a soup for a while. And MM, Huey, and Starlight, they start heading back to New York City. And they're kind of discussing things there. And
like, how's this even possible?
Yeah. You know, how's she? Because Stormfront looks fairly young still, probably in her late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
You know. And so they're kind of just like, I don't know how this is happening. And Starlight Base says, well, maybe Compound V affects her differently.
Maybe she doesn't age as fast as everyone else.
Right. So I have a feeling that I've got two theories. One, I think that Compound V had obviously makes her stay young or look young. But I think that it also started to affect her mind. And that's why she did what she did and killed this lady's brother. Also because she's racist, obviously. But that's what got her to that point. And I think that Vaught then saw that situation and thought, okay, well, we've got to do damage control here. And they just stashed her away. They like imprisoned her somewhere. And when the moment was right, then they unleashed her back here. And I think that that's, Stormfront is being brought back into the picture now, one, because they needed somebody to kind of take the heat off of all the publicity that they're getting from the Compound V and turn it into a different publicity. You know, they always say, what's the saying?
Any publicity is
right. Good publicity. Any publicity is better than no publicity.
Yeah.
So they bring Stormfront in because she's given them this bad publicity of like, oh, I'm against them or whatever, but it's taking it off of the Compound V thing, right? Not only that, but she's kind of their defense against Homelander because they clearly see Homelander's kind of getting unhinged too. So I think that's one theory. The other theory is that she's just a clone of whatever version of Liberty that there was from back in the 70s.
I have my own theory.
Well, you have your own theory because you know what it is.
It's not a theory. I know what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are my two theories.
Good theories, Alex.
Either that they cloned her or they just stashed her somehow and imprisoned her, and now they're just bringing her back because it's the right
time. I'll tell you what. You could be right. You could be wrong.
We'll see. But yeah, so that's pretty much the end of that story arc. They get back to New York City, And that
they drop off Starlight, and Huey and Starlight have a quick conversation, and she's like, "What we did can never happen again." And right. He's kind of confused, like, "Well, yeah, you're right, but why?"
Yeah,
and she's like, "We can't get comfortable. We're not safe. We have to not be so comfortable with each other."
Like Billy said in the last episode, and like Kobe said, RIP. Job's not done.
Job's not done.
Job ain't finished. You think it's finished?
Yeah, but I would try to still have sex. I don't know. But anyway.
And so there's an ending to this episode then. In the last couple of minutes, we see that Homelander goes back to his little sex cabin, right?
Oh, yeah.
We already know that it's not actually Madeline. Oh, no, wait, hold on. Let's rewind.
Yeah, because Stormfront kind of convinces him a little bit. Like, hey, you don't need anybody. Like,
well, he confronts her first.
Right.
He basically goes to her apartment or whatever at Vault and is like, what do you think you're doing? You're taking away the limelight.
I'm the
me.
Leader of the seven, not right. you. Da, da, right. da. And she kind of, she's...
She like, with, gives without, it back to him.
Yeah, but she's also giving advice. She's like, look, I did all this with three people that I basically pay...
With Arby's gift
with
cards.
With Arby's gift cards.
Whereas you're spending millions of dollars trying to convince the public to like
you. You don't need 50 million people to love you. You just need 5 million people. You have followers. I have an army.
Right.
And this is so, I know like I'm trying not to like expose that, but this is such an important part.
Okay. All right.
What she's doing, I don't know how to explain without spoiling it. She's just.
Well, then just don't say anything.
She has a plan.
Just don't say anything.
And she's doing it how she needs to do it. So that it pushes Homelander to go like, I don't need, because she's like, I'll help you. And she goes, in any way possible. She gets a little touchy and handsy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't need your help. I don't need anyone's help.
Right.
So this leads him to go to the cabin. Yeah,
he goes back to the cabin, walks in. Madeline, a.k.a. Doppelganger, is there. And she tries making some advances on Homelander.
He's not doing shit.
He's not having it. You know, then she tries to, you know, get sexual with him. He doesn't want that either.
And he's like, I don't need anyone. I just need myself. And this is where it gets even weirder.
Yes. So Doppelganger is formed up as Madeline right now, right?
In the lingerie.
With the lingerie.
Yeah.
But when he says, I don't need anyone, I just need myself, he grows a little bit taller, still has the torso and the legs of Madeline, but then changes his face to Homelander.
No, the whole thing is Homelander.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
It is not Madeline Stillwell's body.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Those arms were too big to be Madeline Stillwell's body.
He grows, but it's still in the lingerie.
He's still wearing the lingerie, but it's in Homelander's body.
I'm pretty sure it's still...
I wish I had my phone on me.
I'm pretty sure it's still
her
body.
In the comments, is it full-on Homelander or is it just Homelander's face?
We're going to go watch it.
But I want to know in the comments. You tell me.
I'm telling you, it's Homelander's face and head with Madeline's body. He grew a little bit.
Nah.
So he's taller, but he's not even. He's still not even as tall as Homelander. I'm telling you.
I'm telling you, no. Those are Homelander's pecs, dog. He was...
I don't know. Anywho. But it's Homelander, and he basically says, like, okay, well...
You're so great. You don't need anyone. You're right. I'm the best. I'm the greatest of the seven.
Right. He starts making the advances as Homelander, and Homelander's more...
It almost seems like he's into it.
Yeah.
And it gets weird, because then... Doppelganger Homelander goes down.
Yeah, he says,
and he's like, I'll suck your. I don't even want to fucking say.
I don't know what we can or can't say. I don't know. I mean, clearly this podcast is not for children.
You can say it, but I don't.
You can surmise as to what he's going to do and say.
It's still this moment. Like, Homelander is like a little into it.
Yeah.
But then finally
starts to bring
him
back up.
Puts a stop to this nonsense, right?
And lifts him up.
Don't have sex with yourself, guys.
Yeah. Don't. You'll go blind.
That's what I was told. You get hairy palms.
But then he lifts up Doppelganger and starts choking him and says, I don't need you.
Snaps his neck with one hand, ease, like a twig.
Yeah.
Poor Doppelganger.
Yeah, I feel bad for Doppelganger because like he's just basically being used all the time.
Yeah.
And never really like got much out of
also,
it.
Also, yeah, he was... He's,
and you have to imagine he's only doing all of this stuff because he feels like if I don't do it, Homelander's going to kill me.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, has this bright idea to become Homelander, thinking, well, that'll help. And he kills him anyway.
Yeah, which also, bad idea by Homelander, because Doppelganger's a nice asset to have.
Yeah, totally could have been used in a ton of different situations.
Yeah.
So why, I mean, he killed him because he's a crazy person, obviously.
Yeah.
But strategically, not a smart move.
No.
Not a smart move at all.
Not at all. But yeah, so it ends there. Do you want to touch on the deep stuff real quick? Because that's, you said you want to get on that later.
Yes.
So all these ladies are being interviewed. There's about four throughout the show randomly popping in. I just want to mention my favorite thing is there's this girl. She's like, with my last boyfriend, you know, he was obsessed with Ed Sheeran.
And I knew you were going to say something about that one.
Yeah. And she's like, so for a while, they're like, I mean, he knows the whole catalog, loves him. He's the best ever. So we went together and we got this. And she shows a tattoo and it's of Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, they got her and her boyfriend got matching Ed Sheeran tattoos.
And then she goes, a week later, we broke up. I fucking hate Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, nobody hates Ed Sheeran.
I think there are definitely some. I've definitely heard some people say they don't.
Yeah, but you're a terrible person.
Truth.
Because one thing Alex and I agree on is that dude don't miss.
Nah.
Ed Sheeran.
Hit after hit.
Ed Sheeran don't miss. But there's a lot of different ones. And then the final one towards the end of the show is this lady. She's like, I'm a feminist, but I'm also a pleaser. I want to please my man all the time. You
especially
know,
sexually.
Yeah, it gets real sexual. And that's when you realize this is the interviews are for the deep to find a wife.
Right.
And he's like, she's the one. She's the one. And Carol's like, nah, she's not.
Yeah, she's like, you're going to choose. Or no, she's like, the one is Cassandra.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I thought I got to choose. And she basically says, you are choosing. You're choosing Cassandra. And so, you know, they're trying to find him a wife to rehabilitate his image, to further their agenda of getting him back in the Seven.
Yeah.
So, you know, he reluctantly, I guess, kind of is okay with him, whatever. But I do want to talk about this because I have a theory about this, too.
Me, too.
Well, you know what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's my theory, right? Carol and her church / cult, you know, whatever, I feel like they're kind of like Vaught Jr. And that they've kind of gotten some of these banished superheroes to kind of band together. And now, you know, the closest that they've had to anybody being close to the top is the Deep, right? And so she's trying to get him back into the Seven because then he's going to bring them along. And I think if I had to guess, extrapolate way into the future, I think Vaught does go down and this church group or whatever tries to become the new Vaught. That's my theory.
It is important to note in the last episode when they see the Deep after the whale incident, Stormfront, are you in the church of the whatever?
Yeah, she knows. He says like a slogan of theirs.
Yeah. So this is like not something that's like secretive either. Like this is a known
It's out there.
Group. Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely working to get him in the Seven for sure. And there's a reason why. It's a good storyline for this season. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that's my theory that they're either going to try to be the new Vaught, because I think either Vaught goes down, they try to be the new Vaught, or they're just trying to be like
a part of Vaught.
A Vaught competitor. I don't think they're trying to be a part of them. I think they're trying to be a Vaught competitor. Maybe you've had a Freudian slip there. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, overall, good episode. A little lighter on the action, a lot lighter on the action, but a lot of good plot lines, a lot of good character development.
Yep.
We're halfway through. I feel like at this point in season one, we kind of had like another little dip down as far as like the plot moving along and the storyline, whatever, with like episodes like 5 and 6, and then 7 and 8 obviously ramped it back up. I'm interested to see if it's going to follow that same kind of path where these next couple episodes kind of dip down in the action a little bit, kind of dip down in the story, and maybe we're kind of getting some things that set up the last two episodes. Yeah. Or who knows, maybe we just get rocket ship straight to the moon and we're just continuing on here.
Maybe.
I'm excited to see what we've got, but also kind of, I don't want to say sad, but like, I don't know, like we're moving, again, I mentioned we're moving through this really fast and we're getting through to the end of this season. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll be at the end of season two.
Yeah.
But then we've got season three to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's good.
No end in sight. Well, yeah, there is, but
there
still.
Is. But then, you know, by the time we finish season three and Gen V, season four will be right around the corner.
And we'll be ready to go.
Yeah. And I'm excited for that because at that point, we'll both be caught up. You don't know any more than I do. Actually, before that, when we get to Gen V,
we'll
at that point. But
and we both haven't even watched the season four trailer yet. So
right. And I think we're going to do a trailer reaction to that at
we
some
have
point,
to.
A little mini episode.
Yeah.
But then once season four drops, everyone's going to be on the same page.
We'll be with you.
And I'm hoping that that'll get us some more engagement with you guys, and we can talk to you more about
things. Start to predict what's coming up next, you know, which would be fun.
Yeah, I think that'll be a fun way to interact with you guys some more. But, yeah, definitely check us out on all of our socials. Check out our other podcast, which also is going to be coming to a close here within the next few weeks. Our podcast on Avatar, The Last Airbender, Netflix edition. That is going to be closing within the next 3 weeks, I want to say.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks. And we have selected our next show. We have teased out that we already have a show in the works.
Yeah.
And we're going to start dropping some clues here, I think probably within the next day or so, depending on when you hear this.
Yeah.
You might be hearing this later today or maybe tomorrow.
Some would say it would set the world on fire.
Oh, you know what's crazy? I was like, oh, I need to find a way to work that in. And I had an idea. I want to talk to you about that. But yeah, so our next show is selected. We're excited for that. And we've got a short list of some other shows throughout the rest of the year.
And some other content ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you posted.
But listen in on, you know, all the different podcast areas. Let us know what you're thinking. And
yeah, see you on the next one. Yeah.
Let us know what else you want to see. And yes, we'll see you on the next episode. I'll see you later, or I'll see you one another time. Peace.